That's awesome.
Hi, I'm an addict named Mark. Ah, oh, this is amazing. You know, I actually remember 2 years ago, I was just sharing somebody before this meeting, I remember 2 years ago, I grabbed one of these microphones after a meeting and I started singing the theme from The Love Boat. And she grabbed the microphone away from me. She goes, you could hear it in the next room. And I started thinking that someday I'd like to do this. And someday is today. And it's an amazing journey that it's been to get here. And I still have a lot of trouble. I have a lot of trouble coming to terms with the fact that I deserve to be here. And I struggle with that every day. And you know, my brain before this tells me that I'm probably gonna fumble this and trip. And the measure of this won't be the applause, and it won't be how many people I save out here. The measure will be that I make it through, and that gives me the courage to move on and have another day. Our topic today is if you want what we have. And when I think about wanting what we have, you know, I go way back and I start thinking about, you know, what I wanted when I was a kid. And what I wanted when I was a kid, I didn't want parts of anything. You know, I didn't want to learn how to read music, but I wanted to be Mickey Dolenz from the Monkees, you know. I'm dating myself. And I wanted to be a rock star. I wanted to be a rocket scientist. I wanted to be an astronaut. But I didn't want to learn how to, you know, do math. I wanted the short path out of everything. But what it really is, I didn't want to be me. I just wanted to be you. I wanted to be somebody else. I didn't want to keep any parts of me. I didn't want to struggle to even identify any parts in me that I liked. I just didn't like anything about me, and I wanted to be somebody else. And when I got here, what I found out is that, well, initially, the exact same things held true. I got here, and I wanted your girlfriend, or I wanted your car, or I wanted those shoes, and I wasn't willing to do any of that stuff. I wasn't willing to do any of the things that it took to get those things. I assumed that somehow you had it easier, you had it better, and that's why you got those things. And what I didn't realize is that it took work. It took dedication. It took being a friend. It took sometimes sacrifice. And I was taking the short path. What it took for me to get these things is a sort of a slow learning process. And the best way for me to explain this is my experience in this. And when I came in here, I didn't come in exactly honest, and I didn't come in here very willing, and I was scared to death, and I was suffering from terminal I can't stand myself, and I couldn't look in the mirror. And I needed to learn how to be honest. And Frank right there taught me how to be honest. He got me on the path. And it wasn't an easy path. And Frank took me out to lunch about a year into my recovery, and maybe 6 months into my recovery. And just before I got clean, I worked for NASA, and it's an amazing job. And when we met for lunch, Frank's a scuba diver, and Frank was telling me about scuba diving, and I started telling him about my adventure scuba diving and how much I loved it. And how much it was an amazing thing to go scuba diving down, look at the rocks and the coral formations and all this stuff and the giant squids and all this. And we had this great Technicolor conversation. And at the end of this conversation, Frank said, we should go scuba diving sometime. And he paid for lunch, and we went our separate ways. And I got home, and that's when it all started dawning on me. I'd lied about everything that I'd talked to him. I'd never been scuba diving in my life. I had no idea, but I had a really nice scuba diving watch, and I had worked at NASA, and of course it was certainly a possibility. But the truth of the matter is that NASA had asked me to take the scuba diving training course, but I had failed it because I smoked cigarettes, I smoked crack, and I didn't have the physical stamina to do that. But what I did is I called Frank. Because I started, I started thinking that maybe I needed to do a few things different. And when Frank answered the phone, I told him. And after he finished laughing, he told me that he was proud of me for thinking enough of myself to come clean with that. And, you know, I'd like to tell you that was the last time I lied. It wasn't. But it was the beginning of knowing I didn't need to in here. And that gave me the comfort to keep coming back and start peeling that onion that we talk about in here. And I needed to learn about relationships. And I looked at my friend Don. And I struggle with relationships. I still do. And I needed to know how it worked and why his relationship was working and mine weren't. And again, it was my need to fill that hole in immediately and not having the patience to let that thing grow as it should and just not being ready. But I needed to fill that hole. And Don would always be there explaining to me and pointing the way, and I'd promptly forget everything he'd say and go back out there, and I'd bang my head again. And I'd come back, and he'd, you know, put his arm around me and tell him. And by watching the way Don talked to me about that, talked to me about relationships, what happened is this amazing thing is 2 years later, I got to see a friend of mine going through the exact same thing, and I was telling him the stuff that Donnie had taught me. And I was going, where did I get this from? And I got to see it from a whole different perspective. And I learned that I don't need to fill anything today. The only thing I need to do today is not use. I needed to learn about getting through fears. I needed to learn about anger, how to manage anger. I have a wonderful sponsor who calls me on my stuff. And, you know, sometimes I get really upset at him. I get very mad at him. I get so mad that sometimes I say, F you. And, you know, he looks at me and he just turns away and he doesn't yell it back. He walks away. And when he knows that what's going to happen is that I'm going to think about it and I'm going to call him. And I do. And he's right there for me. And he tells me what I could have done different. And I stay clean another day. It's an amazing thing that we do in here. It's a place where you can come in and talk about your experiences. And by talking about your experiences, I'm going to hear something that I'm not comfortable talking about yet. But when you talk about it, I'm immediately put in a place where I think it's okay. And I might just come up to you after a meeting and talk to you about it. I may not be ready to talk about it in a meeting. But it puts me in a place where I'm okay talking about it. I can't tell you how many things I came in here with that I never thought I'd share with another soul. And I can tell you that just about 90% of those things are all of my network know about now. And you know what? I'm so okay with that. I use my network in all aspects of my life. Sometimes it's not the most comfortable thing in the world, but I want what they have. And if I want what they have, I'm going to do what they do, not but what one does. When I first came in here, back to relationships, yeah, I wanted a relationship, and darn it, I was going to have one. And I went up to my sponsor at the time, not my current sponsor, but I went up to him and I asked him if it was okay to start a relationship. And he suggested that I wait a year. And so I went to my grand sponsor and I asked him if it was okay to get a relationship. He said, maybe you should wait a year. So I went to my great grand sponsor and I got the same results. And I kept going through the rooms looking for the answer I wanted. And finally, I think I had a newcomer with 3 days tell me it was perfectly good to go ahead and get in that relationship. And you know, I did. And I'm not in that relationship anymore. And this selective choosing of what I want to hear is what drives me getting multiple opinions. You know, I want what we have. You know, I want what we have. What Donnie has in relationships is not Donnie's thinking. Because I know Donnie's working a program, a we program, and I know that what Donnie knows is the culmination of group conscious, let's call it. And so in going after that, I know that the choice would be the popular choice, not my thinking. When I think about second opinions, I have a story. And there's a guy, and he's just been having terrible headaches for years. It's horrible headaches for years. And he's trying to figure out what he can do to get rid of these headaches, and he decides to go to the doctor. And he goes to the doctor. He says, "Doctor, I've been having these terrible brain-splitting headaches for years." So the doctor looks him over and comes up to him and says, "You know, I have some bad news. I found the problem, and the problem is that your testicles are pushing against your spinal cord, and it's giving you a headache. And to cure it, we need to remove your testicles." So the guy looks at him and says, "Well, go ahead and pull them." So they remove them, and the guy's walking down the street for the first time in years. He doesn't have a headache. His headache is gone. He said, "This is amazing." At the same time, he feels somewhat self-conscious. He decides he wants to buy himself a new suit. So he goes in to buy a new suit, walks up to the tailor and says, "I'm a little bit down in the dumps. I think a suit will help." The tailor looks at him and says, "You're about a 44 regular, aren't you?" And the guy says, "That's exactly right. How'd you know?" The guy says, "I've been a tailor for 60 years. I know this stuff." The tailor says, "How about a new shirt to go with that suit?" The guy says, "Yeah, let's make it happen." The tailor says, "You're about a 13 and a half collar with a 33 sleeve." And the guy says, "That's amazing. You're exactly right. How'd you know?" "I'm a tailor. I've been a tailor for 60 years. I know this stuff." Taylor says, "How about a new pair of underwear to go with that new suit and that shirt?" And the guy says, "Absolutely." And the tailor says, "You're about a 36. And the guy says, "Aha, gotcha. I'm a 34. The tailor looks at him and says, "It's impossible. If you wore a 34, it'd push your testicles against your spine and it'd give you headaches." It's worth getting a second opinion. Don't jump on the first bandwagon. And it's my history that I go for the answer I want to hear, and that's enough. It stops there, and I can just stop at that point, and I don't need to hear anything else. And sometimes I miss the message. I miss what I really need to learn. One of the other things that happened in here is that I grew up a little bit about how many things I deserve, and how I want to achieve things, and who am I willing to hurt to achieve those things. And man, I'm surrounded by incredible people that make it through the most amazing things. And when I catch myself feeling sorry for myself, or I wake up, once again, you guys step to the plate. One of the biggest fears I have, the biggest reservations I have, was brought about by a meeting I went to, and a guy shared about living with his mother, and his mother was fighting cancer, and she was going to die, and one of his fears was that if she died, there would come a time when the bills would all be paid, she would be put to rest, he would come home, close and lock that door, and be alone, and that he might use. And that man ended up using in that very example, in that very thing. His fears came realized. I got to watch that happen. I got to hear him share about it, and I also watched him come back into the rooms. I live with my mom, and she's gone through triple bypass surgery, and it was something that I lived with fear for a really long time, that once again I'd lock those doors and I'd end up alone. And I have David C. I called him the day he lost a parent, and that guy spent an hour on the phone with me. He just lost a parent. He spent an hour on the phone with me. Now I called because I wanted to help him through it. But what really happened is he helped me get through it when I need to. Because I know I can get through that clean. Because I've seen him do it. I don't believe there's anything in the rooms, outside the rooms, on this planet that would betray what I've learned in here, what I've seen people make it through in here. When I think about wanting what we have and compare it to what I had when I was doing what I do, you know, what part of serenity is not going to work for me? What part of honesty is not going to work for me? What part of friendships that are limitless, boundless? I've got friends in here that we laugh at the exact same time about the exact same thing, and I've never had friendships like that, ever. This was all for letting go and looking at this crowd of people and as a whole saying, I want what they have. Not what he has, not what she has, not what they have, not those shoes. I want what you have. I have a friend. Her name is Mary C. Her nickname's Miracle Mary. Miracle Mary was diagnosed with a brain tumor about 4 years ago. And Mary went through all the chemo and all the stuff that doctors do. And she made it through that. She got better, her hair grew back. Mary's beautiful. It's a picture of her. You can come up and look at her, but she's beautiful. And she's here, I actually saw her. And about 3 months ago, Mary's tumor came back. And she's been given a due date. She's been given it's terminal, and we're probably going to lose Mary soon. So what does Mary decide to do? Mary decides to have a pre-pass life celebration. And she invites 100 of her closest friends out to a party out in Laurel. And there's a mirror ball and dancing and disco. And I dressed up in a tux because that's what I wanted to do. And I danced with Mary. And she shared about being there, she shared at the microphone to all of us that it was the happiest moment of her life. I want that. I want that in my life. If I'm standing here and there's a 747 loaded with fuel and it's coming down at me and I got a stem in my hand and I got a minute, do I light the damn thing and just forget about y'all? Or do I look across the room and see your smiling faces and know you love me and throw that stem down? Sometimes a 747 is a tumor. She just smiled at us and told us that it was the happiest moment of her life. I want what she has. And she got that right here in Narcotics Anonymous. Every fiber of my being told me that when I was walking up to this podium, that I didn't belong here, that I didn't deserve this. And I know that some of you are probably still out there saying, did he say testicles? And you know what? I could measure, I guess, that as not having, never mind. But what that is, what that tells me is that I've succeeded. And I succeeded today because I made it through this. And by making it through this, I kept myself clean another day. And by keeping myself clean another day, I'm here to give my experience to the next guy I meet who comes in the doors thinking that he can't look at himself in the mirror. That I can share the story of Mary and David and Donnie and Frank and Robert and all the people in my life that I love. I can share all those stories with them. They may get it, they may not. But in sharing them, I know that I'm doing what I always thought I should be doing, but never could. I'd walk down the street and I'm saying, if a building ever catches on fire, I'm going to be a hero. And I'm going to run in there and I'm going to save lives. And, you know, I don't know if a building caught on fire. I can't tell you if I'd go in it or not. I don't know. But I can tell you that when I'm around the people that I'm talking about and my network and the network of friends I have, I feel like I feel like what a person got pulled out of a fire by the firemen. I guess I feel like that person surrounded by those firemen. I'm surrounded by people that caught me, that put up with my stuff, that watched me and kind of loved me and shook their heads and smiled, never made me feel less than, always made me feel a part of, and taught me, and still teach me. And I love each and every one of you. I love being alive today. And it's a result of doing what you do. Thanks for letting me share.
All right, I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Natch.
I'm Natch G, and I'm a recovering addict. Sorry. That's awesome. That is truly awesome that we get to do this. And I don't know why they make me come behind a speaker like that. You know what I mean? To set the tone for recovery. And I appreciate that. I appreciate that, Mark. And I can truly identify with all that was said. You know, how this topic asks us if you want what we have to offer. And it's not saying if you want what Natch G has or what Mark says. It says if you want what the we have, and the we is Narcotics Anonymous. I'm truly grateful to the God of my understanding that he brought me and delivered me to these rooms and from the disease of addiction and from that compulsive and overpowering desire to continue to destruct and destroy my life and my future and all those things. And I bring you greetings from Friday Night Free at Last group of Narcotics Anonymous in the south of the Potomac area of Maryland. That's my home group where I'm still in service. After 19 years, I still believe in service. I still believe in showing up for a meeting and helping to make coffee and counting money and putting up chairs and getting speakers and making sure that the door is open to the still suffering addict or just a recovering addict that's seeking recovery. I'm just truly grateful. I got clean March the 20th, 1989, and you know, crack was running people in here rampantly. You know, I mean, it was beating us up, man. I mean, that thing was tearing us up bad, man. I had tried many ways and means to get more, and I tried many ways to get clean. You know, I went to many church functions and programs and things like that, and I can remember this year I went to one of my spiritual advisors. Well, I called him up right on my anniversary date. I said, you know, my wife didn't have to call you for 19 years and tell you that I was missing in action. And I was a binger, so I would get missing for like 3 and 4 days. Nobody would know where I was. I didn't even know where I was. I didn't even know where I was. Once I take that one hit, it was all bets was off, you know. And 2 days later, he called me up and said, I want to talk about relapse. Somebody in his family had just relapsed. And they had been in treatment 6 months prior to that. And it was somebody close to him. And he was able to reach back to me and ask me for some help to walk him through that. And I told him just like our literature tells us, if you want what we have to offer and you're willing to make an effort to get it, then, you know, you're ready to take certain steps. And the deal is that you have to ask for help in here. We're not going to go and beat you down and march you down and try to bust this recovery program and break it over your head. You know, at least most of us don't. But, you know, we have tried, and we find out that it didn't work, because if people want to use, they're going to use. You know, I don't care how much you chase them down, how much you call them, and how much you sit outside their house and wait for them to come out and all that stuff. They go out the back door and dodge you and go use. They go do what addicts do. If you really want to use, I know one thing, and the 12th step talks about it. You can't compete with somebody in their full-blown addiction. We're not going to get this until we're ready to surrender, until we're ready to go and ask for help and humble ourselves. This program is big on humility, a character-building program, ego-deflating. So it's good. It's good to get out the way and let people ask. And that's what I told him. I said, this person has to come and ask me for help. You can't ask him for. You can't ask me for him, and I'm not going to call him, even though I wanted to. And they haven't called me in about a week or so, and I want to call them, but I'm not, because I know it ain't going to work that way. You have to humble yourself. This program talks about that humility, man. And a lot of times we want to enable people and pad their bottom. You know what I mean? Natural. You know, we don't want to see nobody hurt. Sometimes they have to hit bottom and hit it hard, man. And they know how hard it can get, you know. And sometimes we're just in God's way when we're trying to pad the bottom, when we're trying to make it better for them. And when we don't practice tough love, you know, and tough love tells a person what they don't want to hear, you know. And this program, it talks about if you want what we have to offer and you're willing to make an effort to get it, that means you got to do something. This program just didn't get on me by osmosis. I had to keep showing up to my home group. I had to pray. Help somebody with no strings attached. Build a network. That means ask people for phone numbers. And once I ask them for phone numbers, use them. I was listening to somebody before the meeting. They said, well, how many times I got to give you my phone number? Well, you know, the fact of the matter is we got to give it to them as many times as they ask. You know? And, you know, sometimes we're hoping some people don't call us, but, you know, we got to give them the right number anyway. You know what I mean? But you know what? Those people that you help don't call you are probably the ones that help you the most. You know, I look at the people I picked, hand-picked, that wanted to be in my network. Those are the people that didn't work out. The ones that I was kind of reluctant to give my phone number, those are the ones. A lot of them are the ones that kept coming back. And they may only call me once or twice a year. And I may see them at a convention or at a meeting. But the little bit of stuff that we shared during that time helped them, and guess what? It helped me the most, especially when I see them years down the road and still clean. And they tell me, man, you helped me so much. This builds my self-worth. It builds my self-esteem. There's a secret to staying clean, and I might tell y'all before I finish talking. But this is a secret to staying clean. You know, when we do the things that this program suggests that we do, and people look at us, and they come in, and they see us, and this is the secret, enjoying life without the use of drugs. They want what we have. They need to see us, the camaraderie, the respect, the love, getting in and out of relationships if that's what you want to do, staying in a relationship for a long period of time. You know, you were talking about, you know, the people that told you don't get in a relationship. Well, how about the people that tell you don't get out the relationship for a year? You know what I mean? We don't hear a lot about that one, the one that they tell you to stick and stay for a minute. You know what I mean? This too shall pass, whatever you're going through. You know what I mean? And that's what I had to do in my recovery. I had to stick and stay. I've been married to my wife for 20 years, and we've made it through those tough times. And there's probably some more rocky roads to come, you know what I mean? And I just hope that I don't create them. That's another story. But anyway, I came into the program when I was 25 years old, and I stayed. So you don't have to be an old fogey to get this program. You know, you can be young and vibrant, you know what I mean? And I came in here, and there were some old fogies that you know, they didn't like me coming in and getting this program. You know what I mean? They didn't like that I came in with a God of my understanding. They didn't like, you know, some people get jealous of you around here. That's just the truth. I don't care what you say. You know what I mean? That's my story. But you know what? I stayed anyway. You know, and I stayed because that dope had beat me up so bad. You know, I didn't want that feeling of what it feels like when the dope runs out. I don't know if y'all know about that feeling, but that's a miserable feeling. And then you got to find ways and means to get more. You know what I mean? I've had people that I use with that say, man, you don't need to use because you got too many ways and means to get more. You know what I mean? And some of them end up dying out there. Some of them just with our promises, those other promises talk about. Jails, institutions, and death, those are some promises too, if we continue to practice that self-centeredness, doing it our way. So anyway, in this topic, when you think about if you want what we have to offer, and you get into that hopeless state, and you don't stay there, and somebody come up to you a month or two down the road and say, how did you get through that? I heard you share about that. And look at you now. You know, you're showing up to meetings, you're still at your home group, you're smiling, you're laughing, and you know what I mean? And the only thing we can tell them is that we just kept coming back. We didn't use. We talked to people. We applied the steps in our life. We learned to accept our powerlessness, not only over drugs, but over people, places, and things, play toys and playmates and playthings. Is that another story, or is that part of my addiction? That's part of my addiction, you know? And then we move into the hope part of this program, where we hope that this program can work for me, like it has worked for you. You know what I mean? I've seen people with many years back in the day, we used to call them old-timers, and I guess we still do, and we call them old-timers, and man, I really wanted what they had, man, because they had that joy, you know, unspeakable joy, man, that this program gives you if you continue to do the next right thing, the next right thing, the next right thing. And when we do that, this is when we begin to recover. When we was at the World Convention, someone said that freedom, and that's what the program promises, is that one freedom from active addiction. But they said the freedom begins in the sixth and seventh step. I was like, wow, all these years, and I really never even heard that, even though you kind of live it, because the deal is that we stop operating off of those character defects and we begin to practice these principles of this program, and then we have character assets, and then our family want us to be around them. We learn how to raise our children. We learn how to ask for help in raising our children. We learn how to ask for help to stay married, not to walk away. We learn to ask for help to how we get to the next level on the job. How did you go back to school? How did you graduate from school? How did you go back to get your GED? How did you not go to jail even though you was caught dirty? You know what I mean? And these kind of things, man. And we got people around here that will share their experience-driven hope with us. And I keep coming back. Even after 19 years, I don't have a night where I don't go to meetings. I don't have a night where I plan not to go to meeting, where I can't speak at a meeting that night, or I can't show up at this anniversary on that night, or you know what I mean? I won't go to a meeting. If my butt's on fire, ain't a night that I've seen that I won't go to a meeting. Matter of fact, I plan to go to a meeting. It just don't work out that way every day. You know, because when I got here, y'all told me to work a meeting in my schedule. Work my day around going to a meeting. I don't know that what they said, that you probably don't need but one or two meetings a week, but you just don't know which one or two you need. So you go to as many as you can. And I don't go to this meeting too many white people. I don't go to this meeting too many black people. I don't go to this meeting, you know, whatever, this men's rap or women's rap or whatever, you know. Come on, man. I'm going to a meeting, and I'm grateful that I bring that joy with me when I go into a meeting. I bring healthy self-esteem with me when I go to a meeting. I bring self-worth with me when I go to a meeting. So if I go in there and people are looking at me crazy and strange, and I don't get the hug, I don't get the welcome that Narcotics Anonymous talks about, I still feel okay about me, because I've done the necessary work on me that I know that I don't have to take the temperature of the meeting. I set the temperature of the meeting because I brought love in with me. I brought a friendly, joyous, happy, joyous, and free spirit in with me. And so I can go in with an open mind and willing spirit and an honest effort to try to be the best that I can be and add something to the meeting instead of looking at what the meeting going to do for me. Try to add something to the meeting, Nash. So, and I still want what y'all have. I still want what y'all have. I mean, I've get something out of my network, and you know, we get together and we do the things, the same things we did when I first got here. We still go to dinner. We still go out to eat. We still talk about the steps. We still talk about how this program works in our life. We still talk about our feelings, our fears. We talk about our failures. We talk about our accomplishments. We encourage each other. We get happy for each other. We show up for each other whenever possible that we're going through. You know what I mean? And this is the kind of people that I wanted to be around all my life. Because I wasn't a half partner when I was out there. If you walk with me and we went to sit down to use whatever I was using and you was with me, you used too. I was not a half partner, ducking and dodging. I liked the fellowship. And I got people in here now that use with me, and they'll tell you. When we went, we went. You dig what I'm saying? So the same thing applies in recovery. I said take that same attitude that I did using and apply it to my recovery. And when I do that, I'm guaranteed to get the results that I want, which is freedom from active addiction. It's been working for me up until this time. So then I got to share with y'all that when I came in, I could barely read and write, you know, and I came in with low self-esteem. And most of it surrounded, you know, my upbringing with the being mentally challenged. Well, they said they got a label now as dyslexia. You know what I mean? But back in my day, you was just a special ed student. You know what I mean? They kind of put you in the corner, kind of push you on through, you know. And So that kind of stuff kind of breeded, you know, me looking outside of myself for that joy and wanting to be happy and things like that. So I had to do the things to fit in and all that kind of stuff. But when I got here, y'all pushed me into the areas, and you know, I had to read these readings, so I had to listen. And in listening, you know, I learned what these words were saying and what the readings were saying, and I still try to get the meetings on time to hear the who, the what, the why, the how it works, the traditions. Excuse me, and even go to some meetings where there's some concepts being read, and I got a better listening ear than I have a reading ear, than I have a reading eye. But in here, you know, I've learned to read, and I'm grateful because that although I graduated from high school and y'all pushed me to go back and take some classes and take more classes, any free class the job was given, I don't care if it was on the Easy Bake Oven, I took it. If they was paying for it, I took it. Because that's what y'all told me to do. And, you know, I was tired of doing stuff my way, you know what I mean? Because I realized that my way didn't work. You know, I had evidence that my way didn't work. Every time I did it my way, I jackpotted myself, things didn't go out right. So when I got here, I was beaten, you know, when you became willing. That's what the literature talks about. And that's another reason why we can't pad people's bottom. If they want to go out there and use, let them. No problem. That's what you want to do. You think that's going to work for you? I'm powerless. So just like when I was beaten, I became willing. If that's what you got to do, if you can't learn from my experience, if you got to learn everything from your own experience, go ahead. So when I came back in, I came in here, I learned how to read, and I kept reading, and y'all kept giving me the reading, y'all kept giving me the traditions with all the hard words, and we go to these step meetings where they give you the basic text and they read a paragraph and they push it around and, you know what I mean, they send that thing around. So I was forced to do these kind of things. Not forced, but I was just in position where I had to do it. And so my reading got better. And I stand here to tell y'all that I end up teaching at a college. Now, this is a special ed student with dyslexic that in high school they said my highest expectation would be shotgun on a trash truck. Y'all taught me how to become an entrepreneur. Y'all taught me how to own my own business. Y'all taught me how to go and challenge my fears. Be all that I can be. If you want all that this program has to offer and you're willing to make an effort to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. So learning how to surrender, becoming open-minded, coming to believe that a power greater than myself, not just me, can restore me to sanity, becoming willing to make a decision to turn my will and life over to the care of God, that means it's not me that's doing all of this. It's the we. It's the we, God and you people. I got evidence. I'm watching you walk it, not just talk it. I'm watching you live it. I did my fourth step not because I wanted to, not because of virtue, not because, you know, I'm so smart, but out of obedience. Because one more time, I didn't want to jackpot myself. I didn't want to do this thing halfway. I didn't want half the rewards. I want a whole relationship. And the third step tell us that most of us lack a working relationship with a high power. And at the end of that step, it says, when, you know, after this, you move on to the next step. And it says the proof of this step is shown in the way we live. So y'all told me to take inventory and find out what goes and what can stay, what's good and what's bad, what's indifferent, what are your fears, what are your challenges. And by doing that, I learned the different hats and masks that I would put on to become a chameleon to adapt to whatever environment that I was in. So now y'all teaching me that you still got to adapt to what the environment you're in, but you don't have to sell yourself out. You're a good person. You don't have to compromise on spiritual principles. The truth defends itself. You don't have to defend it. Be assertive. Say what you need to say and let it go. You don't have to make sure of the outcome. The outcome belongs to God. When you vote in the meeting and in your home group, let it go. You got one vote. What a concept. You mean I can't bully nobody? I can't bust people over the head? And I got the kind of network, they come back on you, man. You know, they test you. You know what I mean? How much time I have?
You good,
man. I'm good? Okay. I better check this thing out, you know. Wow. You left me too much time here, Ma. But I got the kind of network, man, that we really involved in each other's lives, man. And we learn how to share on a deep level and share what matters. And, you know, we go through things, man. And, you know, always around my anniversary, man, you know, I don't know why that is, but I just get squirrely. And I don't know, man. And they tell us, you know, that's why we have these milestones, these 30 days and 60 days and 90 days. And then, you know, you have your 9 months and your 6 months, and then they get further and further and further apart and all that stuff. And, you know, and that's to give us something to look forward to and to work towards. And we need goals. We need aspirations. And because, you know, these are the time, and they tell me that this is when our disease be kicking up and at live at most, you know what I mean, around those milestones, man. And they get further and further apart. So, you know, I've learned to understand what the disease is and realize how much this disease play. And still is alive and active and trying to get me to jackpot myself and my recovery. And I got people watching out for me. I got people paying attention to what I'm doing. But that means I have to be vulnerable. I have to tell on myself when I don't want to. And that's why it's important for me to be involved in recovering addicts, not just quote-unquote earth people, you know what I mean? But people who can recognize the disease of addiction, and they know when it's popping up and it's creeping up and it's coming up slowly. And by me being involved in these people's lives, they know, because it's going to slip out. I'm going to tell on myself because I'm used to doing it. I talk too much. So when we have these regular meetings that we have, maybe we go to dinner. I got one sponsee that we go to dinner and we go on such a regular, our wives get upset. they be like, something going on, you know what I mean? But we just have that kind of, you know, network, you know, that we need to do this for us. And we're real focused on what we need to do for our recovery. And we know if we don't get this right, that the rest of those relationships ain't gonna come out right. And so, you know, when we talk, man, things just come out. And a lot of times, they may say, well, I didn't wanna tell you this. Or, you know, things that come out, man, and then we just got to take it from there, man. And the good news is, man, is that we learn not to beat each other up, man, but to encourage and walk each other through that, and to make sure that we on guard when we see those signs creeping in later on, as we walking through this recovery, as we living through this recovery. And in this program, man, I've learned how to live the steps more so than the keep writing them, writing, 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 writing. Although journaling is good and it has its place in the 10th and the 4th step, but what I have to make sure that I'm practicing is a total surrender on a daily basis. I have to make sure I'm constantly practicing that open-minded, that willingness spirit to continue with the rest of the program. to continue to take a good hard look at Nash more so than the rest of the fellowship. That I'm taking some time with the God of my understanding and sorting through the prayer and meditation that this program asked me to do. The program asked me to develop this working relationship with the God of my understanding. And, you know, they say, well, you can't talk about God too much in this program because it might run somebody out here. And, you know, while they have their opinion on that, you know, I have mine. And they're entitled to theirs, and I'm entitled to mine. And that's what the good news is about this program. We come in here, and we learn how to gel together. And we learn how things are working for other people. And we also learn what's not working for them. So people will have their opinions, and all we have to do is watch them. And I had mine, and I have to let y'all know I'm in search of the truth, even if I had to prove myself wrong. And I can't tell y'all how many times I've proved myself wrong in this program. But I keep coming back. Even if I had to practice some humility and come in here and tell y'all that I was wrong, I keep coming back. So if you want what we have to offer and you're willing to make an effort to get it, it's not what I got to offer, because, you know, I will attach motives to it. I would manipulate, and I got my own way of doing things, and it's not talking about Nash's way or Mark's way. Talking about the Narcotics Anonymous way. And so we learn how to sit down and reason together, learn how to disagree without being disagreeable, trying to understand rather than be understood. These things were foreign to me when I got here. I don't know about y'all. I didn't learn that kind of stuff coming up. I didn't learn these coping skills that we have in here. And what I'm telling y'all is that they work outside the rooms in Narcotics Anonymous. And people, other people, want what we have to offer. They want us to be supervisors. They want us to run their businesses, operate their offices, want us to take charge and come in and do the things that we're capable of giving. The many gifts that this convention is talking about. One promise, but many gifts. That freedom is powerful. And it's so broad, because addiction has affected every area of my life. I pray that I make recovery affect every area of my life. I got a son who's 18 now, who's never known his father to use. I got a daughter who's 13. Who's never known her father to use. I got another son that's 8 who's never known his father to use. Those are some of the many gifts. Those are some of the things that the people who are coming in now that's just getting into recovery, they look at me and they say, man, I wish I had got clean when you did. Or some of them say, I wish I had stayed. And it's not for me to get all puffed up and arrogant and say, yeah, you should have. But I can practice some humility and say, I wish you did too. But it's too late for a better past. What about today? You can start today. You can start to make that amends today. You can start by not using today. You can start working on a relationship today by not using. By committing to this program. Y'all taught me about commitment. Showing up to that home group every week. Making sure that the doors are open. If you take a service position, honor it. Call somebody if you can't be there. Man, what coping skills y'all gave me, man. And I have been able to do some tremendous things, man. The World Convention was in Hawaii. I was able to be there. The World Convention was in San Antonio. I was able to be there. San Diego, I was able to be there. Showing up for life, man. The benefits of recovery. Showing up when my children need me to pick them up from school. Encouraging them to take other classes. Showing up for football practice. Showing up when my mother and father needs me. Brothers and sisters, I have a brother that we just went through something. And we had a bit of a disagreement. And some things weren't quite clear. And Yah taught me how to let it go. Not to let the resentment build and fester. Yah taught me how to let people off the hook. And so, in this agreement, there was a little bit of money involved. Yah know how hard it is to let it go when there's money involved, right? And, you know, I can look to the God of my understanding and say, man, you brought me through everything that I've been through up to this point in my life. I have no reason to doubt you now. And I was able to tell my brother, it's already all right. I ain't worried about it. It is what it is. And so, for that, I'm eternally grateful to the God of my understanding how he has used Narcotics Anonymous to improve my life. Thanks for letting me share. Thanks.